You know, I enjoy working with Howie Hendricks. We've been working together off and on for a decade, I guess. And it's a very encouraging thing to me to observe somebody like him and across the years who has become more effective, mellower, friendlier, easier to live with. It's really reassuring that people actually can progress, you know. It isn't just some theoretical stuff that we're talking about. Another thing that is important to me, and that is watching a fellow's family. And I've picked up a few comments from him here and there as his family was growing up, and to look at his family now and to realize that you can still raise effective families and your children can grow up to be mature adults. That's reassuring too, isn't it? And that can still be done today, and I think that's one of the reasons we're both doing this, because what we're talking about, we know, can happen to people's lives. I have been traveling around like this for, as I say, at least a decade, and have been in private practice for 15 years. In fact, I was working in my own clinic for a while that involved eight of us, and we were seeing about 1,000 people a month. So I think we heard about every kind of a problem that there is. And I guess every variation that there is. And so I have a pretty good idea what people do to get themselves in trouble. And I have a pretty good idea also, I think, as to what people can do to get themselves out of trouble. And as I've traveled around and talked to groups, I'm persuaded that anybody that can absorb information, and I assume that's us, and reason, can really appropriate the principles that we need to correct whatever we need to correct on this kind of a basis, coming together as a group. I'm persuaded that most of us don't need private consultation if we want help. Now, there are a lot of people that would just want to talk about themselves and I've realized that some of us, our problems become very precious to us as the years go by. In fact, the older they get, the more precious they become. It's something like a family heirloom, you know. And we wouldn't give up our problems for anything, but we would like to discuss them with anybody that'll listen. Now, of course, that type of thing, I'm not trying to talk you out of your problems. I think anybody's welcome to have problems if they want to. You don't have to be happy if you don't want to. I've had people say to me who are telling me how unhappy they are, and I'd say, you don't have to be unhappy. And they'd say, what? And some of us get mad at a fellow that would expect you to be happy. So I don't know if I'm talking to any crabs or not here. My only point is that I think it is your privilege to keep on being an old crab if you want to. But you don't need to. And we have resources. And as Hard made it very plain at the close of his message, that our resource for appropriating love and joy and peace is God, not physical beauty. The body wastes away, doesn't it? But the person grows. And so as a person, you can grow. And the Bible says about Jesus that as many as received him, as many as have consciously and knowingly asked Jesus Christ to come into your life, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. And his resources are available to you, and that's a pretty important step, as he pointed out, asking Jesus Christ to come into your life, because that makes God's resources available to you. Love, joy, peace, gentleness, kindness. Doesn't that sound great? Would you be willing to become more like that if I could put you in touch with a power that would do that for you? Some of you might say, well, it depends on what my partner does. Because if you would improve, you see, your partner would benefit. And that's a good reason for improving, or it could be your reason for not, because you don't want your partner to benefit. Now, the assumption that we're making here is that you came because you wanted to be as positive and constructive a person as you can be. Now, we were saying yesterday that it's pretty important to look at the whole person. And the whole person, when you think of anybody that you can think of, has some qualities and some strengths. Something that's admirable, something that is positive and constructive about them, and it's important for us to realize this and to let one another know. As I was saying yesterday, being part of a championship basketball team has its rewards because the fellows on the team appreciate the abilities of one another. There's the little pat on the back, there's the little word, good. You stretched on that one. Just little hints that I appreciate your ability. I appreciate your talent. I appreciate the fact that you're giving yourself to this thing. Everybody has those characteristics, but then we all have our liabilities too. And to help each other to do something about those. But we have to be careful that we don't get so preoccupied with the negatives that we forget that most people have got a lot more good about them than they have negatives. And yet you can get so preoccupied with something you don't like that you forget all about the positive side of an individual. And I'm just warning you that we become preoccupied with the negatives. Just as an illustration, did you ever get a speck in your eye? Now you have to admit that if you've got a speck in your eye, that there isn't much wrong with you. I remember one time traveling all the way from Michigan to the state of Washington to look at a mountain. And there we were, after days and days of traveling, there we were, and a speck flew into my eye. And you know, I could have cared less about that mountain. I wasn't worried about my family or my business or my profession. There was only one thing that occupied my attention, and that was to get rid of that speck in my eye. And when I got that thing out of my eye, I couldn't hardly even see it. And I've seen this so many times in a consulting room where one individual will become preoccupied with some little negative about someone else. I don't like the way the money is spent. I don't like the way the housekeeping is done. I don't like the way this person dresses. We differ over the children. And sometimes such little details. Now, I'm assuming this morning that we want to become the most effective couple that we could possibly become. So I guess I ought to start off by asking that question. Is that a fact that you're here today because you would want to be the most effective possible wife that your husband could have? That would sure be a break for your husband, wouldn't it? And the other way around, you would like to become the most positive, the most helpful, the most valuable husband that any woman ever had. And within the limits of your ability, you want to do whatever you can do. I'm making those assumptions as we start out here. It's just like on a basketball team. The fellow that tries out for the team, you assume he wants to play the game. And when people come to me and talk about divorce, my reaction is, friend, you're talking to the wrong guy. I'm in the saving business. Like a physician, if there's a breath of life left, we want to save the life. And you don't talk to me about how do we bury this marriage. You're just talking to the wrong fella. So it's not well, put it the positive way, I'm assuming that that's your intent. Now, assuming that, I'd like to suggest a foundation upon which you're going to build this relationship. And this applies to any two or more people who want to cooperate. Not only marriage. But let me read you this foundation. Now, this is addressed to the Corinthians, and I'll admit that the Corinthians is a big group of people. And marriage involves two people, a man and a woman. But listen to the basis upon which he is suggesting that these Corinthians get together, and this is in 1 Corinthians 1:10. The foundation upon which you will build a relationship involving two or more people. I beseech you, brethren, by the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, are you listening? That you all speak the same thing. And that there be no divisions among you. But that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. Does that sound like you and your partner? Now, mind you, I'm well aware of the fact that he's addressing this to the Corinthians. This is a big group of people. But imagine how complicated that is for a big group of people to meet that requirement. But isn't it equally as difficult for two? Nowadays, you listen to people talk about wanting to preserve your individuality and yet be married. The big question today is that I'm a woman and I want to be me. And the man says, but I want to be me. And you got two people who want to be me and they still want to have a partnership. And it's not possible. Now, let me hasten to point out what I mean. I'm not talking about marriage now. I'm talking about football. And I have the privilege, during the football season, you may or may not know this, that a lot of our professional teams have Christians on the teams. And these fellows like to have morning devotions, and so I have the opportunity of bringing those morning devotions here and there when I'm in different places. And one Sunday morning, I was bringing the devotions to the Miami Dolphins. Have you heard of those? They live in Miami. And they have a pretty good football team. And as they came into this room where I was to speak, each of them had a big, long, yellow sheet of paper, about that long, that wide, and they were all coming in, sort of like that, memorizing what was on that paper. And I was curious, what's on that paper? And so I asked Norm Evans, he's a tackle, and he's a fella that you talk to like that. Big, husky, strong, kindly brute. He just sort of tenderly goes up there to the line and clobbers his opponent. And then helps him up. And I asked him, what do you got on that paper? And he said that that's every possible play that could be called in the game and what I'm supposed to do if that signal is called. Now, there's not much room for individuality there, is there? Or is there? Yes, there is. Because when he runs up to that line and say they're playing Oakland and his opponent is a fellow called Bobo Smith. Bobo Smith is like 7'5" and he weighs 290 pounds. And Norm is saying that all he needs to do if a certain signal is called is to get one step forward and two over. That's all he needs to do. Now, the only problem in doing that is he's got to move Bobo Smith. And there's lots of room for creativity. Lots of room for individuality. And so cooperation on a football team involves a combination of commitment and creativity and individuality. But one thing that you're committed to is the same signal. Can you imagine these fellows running into the huddle? Can you just picture yourself in the huddle? And the fellow calling the signals says, "Now, fellas, I want you all to have a feeling of participation in this next play. And so let's talk it over. What do you suppose we ought to do?" That isn't what happens. They go in there. They're committed. They are. Oh, there was a time when they agreed what plays should be on that big long sheet. But now that part of it is over with, and they're committed to a plan. Oh, they all contributed to making the plan. But now the plan is created, and now you're committed. And so, what do you have? What is it that draws these stadiums full of people every Sunday? It's one of the few, I think. One of the few times when you can watch a group of people who have voluntarily and deliberately and consciously committed themselves to cooperation. Did you get that? I'm talking about individualists. I'm talking about highly skilled people who have the applause of the world available to them, who have consciously and knowingly and deliberately chosen to commit themselves to something. And that's what a marriage takes. It takes two individualists who have deliberately and consciously and knowingly committed themselves to cooperation. Okay? Not competition. Cooperation. Now, I was telling you about this fellow yesterday, college graduate, handsome, progressing in his work, making plenty of money, and he paced his wife in the eye because she is his opponent. You see, when he makes his point, she loses hers. And those two people, whenever there was an issue, they would come together as a couple of opponents to see which one of us is going to win our point. Now, that's not what happens in a football huddle. Those fellows are simply committed to getting the signal and going out and carrying it out. And this is what Norm told me. He said, every once in a while, something like this happens. Say the signal is 20. And the signal caller is going to call five numbers. You know, hoop, 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 1, 20, and then they're supposed to go. But as he's calling those signals, hoop, 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 he sees one of the opponents moving into a position that would foul up the play, and so instead of calling 20, he calls 30, and in a flash, Norm Evans has to change his mind, and instead of going a step this way and two over, he's got to cut across that way, and he's got that much time to decide. Now that's commitment. That's working together. Can you imagine those fellows saying, wait a minute, time out, time out. I got to think this over first. You know, marriage requires commitment. In Philippians chapter 2, he's now talking to the Philippians. And this is what he says to the Philippians. He's now talking to the Philippians. And this is what he says to the Philippians. Second, third verse. He says, "Fulfill ye my joy, that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, and of one mind, and let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves." Same idea, isn't it? I think one of the reasons why we're drawn to these competitive athletics these days is because there are so many predictable things about it. When you turn on your TV set and you have in mind a football game, and that thing comes on, the kind of a field you're going to play on is predictable. Right? Have you ever turned on the tube and the left field line goes like this? And you say, "What happened to that line?" Well, we're broad-minded people around here. We don't want to frustrate anybody. And our linemen got tired of straight lines. And we don't want to make a rebel out of them. You know how it is. When you order somebody to do something, they'll rebel. Therefore, don't order them to do anything, and they won't rebel. So, or can you imagine 10 fellas running out on a football field in a football uniform, and one of them has a tracksuit? Well, we wouldn't want to oppose clothing standards on anybody, you know. No, they're committed. Voluntarily, consciously committed. Now, what keeps us from doing that? Let me read you a Bible verse. It's in Isaiah 53:6. And it says that all of us, that means you, me, like sheep, have gone astray. We tend to stray away from our own commitments, don't we? I can remember when we were single. One night my wife said to me, she wasn't my wife then, she said, "Henry, I'm going to spend my whole life making you happy." Wow, imagine anybody wanting to do that for me. You know, I bought that. I believed her. And I said to her, "Eva, I'm going to do the same for you." You can imagine what a tender night that was, huh? You know, the whole thing collapsed the first week we were home from our honeymoon. I wasn't lying to her. I thought that I meant that and that I could carry it out. I was going to devote my life making her happy. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. We came home from our honeymoon. We had gone skiing on our honeymoon, and I did something when I came home that was predictable, something I've done for years. All I did was go see the boys. And I very enthusiastically told them about the good time we had skiing, and so we did something that we'd done many times, nothing surprising. We planned a skiing trip for the next weekend, me and the boys. And I went home to tell my wife about my plans. Now, mind you, this is her first chance to make me happy, just like she said. And her reaction was, "You're not going. You're married now." And that's the first time that it dawned on me what I had done. She crossed me up. I wasn't thinking about making her happy. Like I said, the only thing I thought about was that she was interfering with me. Me. And I found out very quickly that I was a lot more interested in me than in her, and it didn't take but a week. Have you ever broken a commitment? You made a commitment, and you were sincere when you made it, and it didn't take you very long to figure out that you shouldn't have made it. You don't like it. I'm not going to do it. All of us do that. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. Right? And we have gone, everyone, unto his own way. Isn't that so? Don't you like the way you think? I like the way I think. I even print what I think and sell it. Now, the problem that keeps us from, the thing that keeps us from getting together is that I like my way and my wife likes hers. Now, there's no problem unless my way doesn't agree with hers. That's the problem, isn't it? Now, it's easy enough for us to say one of us ought to have the last word. The difficulty is which one? Especially when you've thought something through and your partner doesn't agree. But that's the international malady. That's the sickness of the world, the tendency to go your own way. That's why you need a Savior, to be saved from yourself. You put any two people together, and sooner or later, you'll come to a stalemate. You'll come to a difference of opinion, an unresolved difference of opinion. And then you will realize that your commitment is at stake. Now, one out of three marriages across the country, and in this part of the country, it's one to one. When your own way comes in conflict with the marriage, your own way becomes more important. To do it the way I want to do it just becomes a gripping, all-pervasive objective that you can hardly shake yourself away from, and that's why you need to be saved, to correct that tendency. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray, and we have gone every one unto his own way. Right? And the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all, on Jesus. And what is the iniquity of us all? I've got to do what I think I ought to do. You see, that keeps us from becoming one. And it's only a divine help that will enable us to really become one. This doesn't only apply to marriage. And I'm trying to emphasize here this morning that what we're talking about is not simply limited to marriage. We hear the term the battle of the sexes. I don't think that's true at all. When you put a man and a woman together, it's not the battle of the sexes. It happens to be that one of you is a man and one is a woman. It's the battle between two people. And that same battle can come between two women or between two men. In fact, one of the greatest business combination in our country that fails the most is the business partnership. Let me illustrate what happens when you put two men together. I had a fellow invite me one time, a friend of mine, and that's what happens in marriage. We're talking about friends. I can't even conceive of a fellow saying to his girl, "You know, you really bug me. I can hardly stand you. All we do is fight. You're always contradicting me. Would you marry me and then we can keep it up the rest of our lives?" Can you conceive of two people getting together on that proposition? Why, of course not. Anybody that marries, you get married on the proposition that no two people in the world will ever have a better relationship than us. This is going to be the finest partnership that any two people ever had. Isn't that right? Isn't that the basis? Well, this fellow that invited me to go on this trip with him was my friend. We admired one another. And there was goodwill between us and respect and faith. He was the director of a mission. He wondered if I would take a world tour with him. My friend. We planned for a year. We do that in marriage, don't we? We go together for a year. Plan the wedding. Yet one girl telling me she interrupted her honeymoon to come see me. Very flattering. The reason she did is because she couldn't stand him. And you know what happened? They got out on the highway after the wedding. Took off for Florida from Michigan. He had a white Thunderbird and a pocket full of money, and that's enough to launch any marriage. Except the Thunderbird is a fast car, and he took off 80 miles an hour, and she looked up at him real sweet and said, "Honey, you're driving too fast." And he wouldn't slow down, and that really startled her that he wouldn't slow down. Now, when you're a 60-mile-an-hour gal, and you're going 80, in a few hours, you're going to get pretty uncomfortable. And she just sat there just contemplating the fact that he didn't care about her. It didn't take them long to come to a debate. It just took them the distance that it took from the wedding parlor to the car. And they discovered a difference, and he wasn't about to adjust, and she wasn't about to accept it. And they stopped for lunch, and she was mad. And then she noticed something else about him she didn't like. Every time he took a mouthful of food, he'd hit his tooth with a fork. And she began to listen for that. And by the time they were through with lunch, she could hardly stand to watch him eat. And then they got into the car, and whoosh, off they went 80 miles an hour for the rest of the day. Yeah, she was so mad at him by the end of the second day that she snuck off and flew home. I remember another girl very tearfully saying to me, "Her husband doesn't care about her." And this was their first breakfast. Can you imagine the drama of the first breakfast? Together. Remember? And she slides the toaster over to him and says, "Toast the toast." He says, "I'm not toasting any toast. That's a woman's job." "But her father always did it." "Well, I'm not going to do it." And there they are in a debate. These are the two people that were going to have such a wonderful marriage, and they got hung up over the first breakfast. Well, my friend and I, we met after a year of preparation in Switzerland. Beautiful place, Geneva. And they called our flight. And you know how it is? You've been waiting for a trip for all of these months, and now here it is. And we had to go through a door like this one over here. And there's not room for two people to go through that door. And me being a humble man, decided that my friend ought to go first. And I said to him, "You go first." And he said, "No. You go first." I said, "No. You go." You know, we got hung up at the door, my friend and me. And finally I gave in and I went through the door first, but I sure didn't like it. And we had a walk to the airplane, and I noticed that there was a little narrow ladder going up that airplane, and I said to myself, "So help me, when I get to that ladder, I'm not going up that ladder first." And when we got there, I said to him, "You go first." He said, "No." See, we had a debate at the foot of that ladder, and finally he gave in, and he went up first. And you know what? I felt a lot better. We got inside that airplane, and there's two seats. Now the question is, who gets the window seat? And I wanted it. And I said to myself, if I offer him that seat, he'll turn it down, and you see, then I can get in and take it. And sure enough, we got to the seat, and I said to my friend, you take the window seat. And he says, no, you take the window seat. And so I said, well, okay. You know, we sat down, I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we both realized that we'd had three problems already, and we were still standing up. This is my friend. And we decided that what we need is a leader. So we called ourselves together to elect a leader. Did you ever have an election with two people?
See, that's the problem in marriage, isn't it? You've got two people. Now, just let me give you some facts to help you with this election.
This man was the director of a mission. His people were expecting him. I was his consultant. They didn't even know I was coming. He invited me. Now, how many of you would vote for me to be the leader? Let's see your hands. Let me run through that again.
You know, it really isn't that hard to figure out who the leader ought to be, is it?
But I just want to point out to you that everybody that goes into marriage goes into it with the intentions that no two people ever had a better relationship than the two of us are going to have. She's just as pretty as she always was. She thrills you just as much. Your anticipation is high. Then what happens? The problem is that all of us, like sheep, have gone astray. And we have gone, everyone, unto his own way. That's the problem. And the Lord hath laid on him, on Jesus, the iniquity of us all. And what is the iniquity of us all? You got to do it your own way. Isn't that right? What's the solution? Change your perfume? Move into another house? I've had many a client who moved his unhappy wife from a little house to a big house, and all he had was an unhappy woman in a big house. I live in Michigan. I've had folks say the solution is for us to move to California. So they moved themselves to California and resumed their argument in California and fought all the way to California. You see, it's a personal thing, and as Howard was saying last night, there's a divine thing that has to happen. And number one, you need a savior. You got to be saved from yourself. And it's his spirit that will give you the love and the joy and the peace and the gentleness and the patience that you need. And it's with that starting point that we can talk about meeting this standard. Fulfill ye my joy, that you be like-minded. Having the same love and being of one accord and of one mind. That's the process.